Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to talk college hockey. This is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com. USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. Be a part of the conversation. Give us a call now or message us on Twitter at USCHO. This is USCHO Live.
Good evening and welcome to USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker and we'll be joined shortly by Jim Connolly. Coming up tonight, our guests scheduled are Quinnipiac head coach Rand Pecknold. His Bobcats are ranked number 13 in this week's USCHO.com poll, and they are in first place in the ECAC hockey standings. It'll be interesting to catch up with him on the Bobcats and the ECAC. Also, we'll be joined in our third segment after we talk with Rand Pecknold with Deputy Executive Director of College Hockey, Inc., Nate Ewell. We'll get a little bit of an input on the landscape around college hockey as things move forward. Certainly the addition of Arizona State and the possibility of other teams being added, or maybe even, Jim, some changes in league alignments. And there are a few things rumbling out there, nothing substantiated, so I don't think we'll talk about it unless you know something in detail. But already some rumblings about some realignment.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, I don't think it's a secret, I've seen message board posts about it, and there seems to be some desire maybe for Notre Dame to change conferences, and I don't know the reason for it. I know that they were very interested in the NCHC way back, well, not way back, but 3 years ago when all this was being talked about, and part of the problem there was their TV deal and their exclusivity with NBC. Or the fact that NBC has to be part of something that they do in terms of TV. And I don't think that was the flexibility the NCHC had back then. So maybe if that changes, they might want to go there. I don't know why. I don't think it's a success thing. I think they've been a pretty good team, but I think that they would be the same type of team in the NCHC that they are in Hockey East. Travel would actually increase. So I don't know exactly why it would happen. But if that happens, that would, you know, possibly start some more dominoes falling. And we saw what happens when dominoes fall 3 years ago. And there were a lot of hurt feelings. There was a lot of league realignment. There was a league that was totally disbanded, one of the oldest leagues in college hockey, the CCHA. And there were new, just everything became kind of new. And in many ways, I think it's worked out for a lot of teams. But if there is some change, how much change could occur?
Well, I can name one reason why the name of Notre Dame might be coming up again for NCHC, and that's Arizona State. It would be good to have an even number of teams joining a league at once.
Yeah, certainly. And Arizona State is a team that will look for a home and does seem to be a very good fit for the NCHC in terms of size of schools, in terms of commitment to athletics and commitment to, in particularly, hockey. I think that Arizona State is making hockey a top commitment sport for them. So I think that they do make a lot of sense for the NCHC. And you're right, you don't want to get to an odd number. I mean, you know, Joe Bertan, you could talk probably at length about what it's like to play with odd numbers, because he had them for so many years. He had nine teams. He had then got to 10, then he got to 11, and he's finally at 12. And so, you know, I think that there is a lot to be said for playing at the even number as opposed to the odd number. Not that it's impossible, but like you said, if Arizona State were to head to the NCHC and there's no other teams drop out, then you're looking at some need for balance. And could Notre Dame be that for that very team? I don't know. It's a lot of speculation right now. And like you said, maybe we shouldn't even talk about it, but that's our job usually, is to talk about it, whether substantiated or not. Rumors kind of do spread a lot in sports.
All I'll say is it's a good thing to have even number of teams in each league. Right now we have 59 teams in Division I with it. Arizona State will have 60, and that means every league should be able to have an even number of teams. And, you know, do the math, right?
You would think that. You would hope, you know, but everybody has to find the right home for them, and the right home aligns in many different ways: academics, budgetary matters, philosophies, even division. What division your school is in terms of an all-sport conference. Sometimes, you know, schools that aren't Division I in all sports don't feel comfortable in other conferences. So I think that that is that's a big part of things that you just have to weigh in. Could it be the fact that we'd have two odd-numbered leagues? You would think not, but you never know, because it just doesn't always perfectly align the way everybody wants things to.
Well, last Tuesday we did not have a program, and that was because of the perpetual snow in the Boston area, postponing the first round of the Beanpot till last Tuesday night. And it ended up being a pretty late night, double overtime, before Harvard dropped one to BU, and then Northeastern advancing. You were there. What are your takes on what happened last week? And then I guess we've got to wait a couple more weeks for the – or is it next week or the week after? It's the week after.
Yeah, still two more
finals.
Weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a crazy time here in Boston. And there's a part of me with you on the phone that feels like I almost shouldn't even be talking about big amounts of snow.
We've had about the same amount right now.
Yeah, I know that you're not Syracuse, where they kind of, you know, snow is part of what they eat, sleep, and drink, and maybe sleep with it more than anything. I can't imagine you don't have it in bed with you, because there's so much of it in Syracuse sometimes. But, you know, down here, what we got, the wallop that we just got, some areas getting, you know, over 90 inches in a 17-day span. So it really did shut down. It's absolutely paralyzed the city in certain ways. And the thought that the Beanpot, which hadn't canceled the game since 1983, and I think it was just the third time ever, Blizzard of 78, the famous Blizzard of 78, which took lives and shut down the city for a week. That was the first time they ever had to cancel the Beanpot game. Again, in 83, they canceled. They postponed the first round, but now both rounds have been affected by it. Like you said, they ended up playing the first round one night late, and that was what kicked us off the air last week, just because of the fact that I was tied up and couldn't find a replacement. But entertaining first round. I don't know if I'll say it's what I expected. I expected coming into this Beanpot that it was four pretty competitive teams. So that, on that note, played out. I thought that BC would be able to get past Northeastern, despite the fact that it was a pretty good matchup. They had played a couple of very tight games just a few weeks earlier. And as somebody said to me, hey, it was bound to happen soon. The way that these two guys have been playing very close games, it was bound to be that Northeastern could pull off the upset, and that's exactly what they did. A very late goal. It was about a minute and 37 seconds left, I believe, in regulation, when an innocent-looking shot went through traffic, ended up in the net. And Northeastern, you know, for the third straight year, they're in a final, but they're still looking for their first Beanpot title since 1988. And the interesting thing is, now with the final and the consolation game being postponed, it's pushed back exactly 2 weeks. So I believe it's the 23rd. So 2 weeks from last night will be the championship game. The two teams have very different travel and games leading into it. Notre Dame comes to BU that weekend prior, whereas Northeastern has to go to Maine for Friday, Saturday. So you're talking about being on the road Thursday, Friday, Saturday, busing back Saturday night, having Sunday to kind of take your collective breath, and then you're playing Monday night for the Beanpot title. So I think that it'll be a very interesting and challenging road for the Huskies if they're going to end their Beanpot drought that, like I said, goes back to 1988. But at this point, I think that they'll also play a lot on emotions. And sometimes, even if you're running on fumes, emotions can do a very good job of dictating what you can accomplish. I picked them in my weekly picks if the game was this past Monday. Now I'm going to have to kind of reevaluate that. It might be a little bit more difficult knowing that they're going to be, you know, clocking upwards of 450, 500 miles on a bus the days prior. So it's too bad that you can't keep this tournament on the right dates, but this is unprecedented snow in the city of Boston. So even though you're probably sitting there kind of giggling, it really
we've
is.
We've only had 68 inches of snow. We've only had 68 inches so far this season. So It's not too bad.
Yeah, we're kicking your butt then. And it's rare that's something I've never wanted to kick somebody's butt in, but Boston right now is kind of hitting the jackpot for snow.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned there, we started out talking about the bean pot, the loss for Harvard. That started 3 in a row and dropped the Crimson from number 6 to number 14. What's going on with Harvard? Is it just a little bit of a bump in the road, or is there something more going on?
I still think that they're a very talented team. McNally, who was their top defenseman, he is injured and he is down now for the rest of the season. But Sean Malone and Alexander Kerfoot actually came back for the Beanpot Semi, and that was the first time that those two had been back in the lineup in quite some time. I know Kerfoot dated back to November, and Malone might have even gone further back than that. It was the first time all season that those two, you know, arguably one of your best forwards and definitely your second best defenseman, had been in the lineup together once all year. But you would have thought that would have been a hell of it. Just doesn't seem, you know, the confidence is so important in college hockey. And when you don't have that confidence, sometimes it can be an issue. And I'm sure, and it certainly showed that Harvard got up emotionally for that game against Boston University. And they were, for the first 30 minutes of the game, the better team. At the end of 30 minutes, they actually had a 3-1 lead and had many opportunities to make it 4-1. By not making it 4-1, BU crawled back. And once they tied that game, you kind of knew it was going to be BU's game. Just because of the fact that Harvard looked exhausted. They looked like they were dead tired. And how that maybe carries over into a hangover into this past weekend, there's a possibility of that. They lost a couple of relatively close games this past weekend to Yale and Brown. But, you know, it's a team. There's teams in the nation right now that just, they have great first halves and they're struggling. I think UMass Lowell can be pointed to one in Minnesota. As well, those three teams had great first halves and were in great position. Maybe Minnesota was starting to slump before the break, but I had a high expectation for all three of those teams, and none of them really have delivered at this point in the second half.
A team that seems to be on the upswing, it's in second place right behind Quinnipiac, when we'll be talking with Quinnipiac coach Rand Pecknold coming up at about 8:20, just a few minutes away. A team that has really put together a string of wins here after the first of the year is St. Lawrence. Now, I saw, of course, it was very early in the season. I saw on consecutive nights St. Lawrence and Clarkson. And of the two at the time, I thought, wow, Clarkson's got a much stronger team this year. But St. Lawrence has put together a string of 7 in a row and 8 of the last 9 and seems to be moving in the right direction, moved into the USCHO.com poll this week. In fact, they will take on Quinnipiac this weekend.
Yeah, that'll be a very interesting matchup. I look forward to talking to Rand Pecknold a little bit about that. They're on a hot streak, and you know they're 16-10-2 overall, but they're 12-4 in conference play. And obviously, when you're putting together wins at this time of year, most of them are going to be conference wins. They just seem to be playing with confidence. We talked to their coach a few weeks ago, Greg Carville, and you know, they have very balanced scoring. I think they have 22 different players have recorded goals for them this year. And they're winning. They're finding ways to win games. And it's a great battle that's going to take place between Quinnipiac and St. Lawrence when you really look at it this weekend. But they're doing a great job, I think, defensively. If you look back for the last 9 games, they haven't given up more than 2 goals. And they have one loss in that. They have a 2-0 loss to Colgate in that. But they also have a 5-1 win over Harvard, a 3-2 overtime win over Yale. That, you know, they're playing very well against some of their top opponents in that league. And they'll face, obviously, Quinnipiac this Friday night. On the road, which I think that factors into it. They've been a pretty good road team, but you're going to be going down to a pretty hostile Quinnipiac building for what will be a big game and, you know, could really be a part in deciding who wins the Clery Cup for the regular season in the ECAC.
St. Lawrence with that streak is also at number 17 in the pairwise rankings, just outside the top 16. So they're moving into at-large bid territory. While we're looking at the pairwise rankings, 7 out of 8 and 8 out of 10 of the top teams are from either the NCHC or WCHA as we stand right now on February 10th.
It's crazy. It just shows how strong the West has been this season. I've been watching it, but as important as it is to watch those teams that are up in the top and very Western dominated, the bottom, and I'm talking about the bubble, is so dominated by Eastern teams, and more importantly, in particular, the ECAC. There are a lot of teams. Right now, Quinnipiac is the only ECAC team inside the top 15 in the pairwise. You have Harvard at 16, St. Lawrence at 17, Yale at 18, and then Colgate tied for 22nd. And then right above that, you have some Eastern teams. You have Providence is at number 10. Them and Boston University, the only teams in the top 10 from the East. Boston College is at number 11. UMass Lowell, who I mentioned earlier, they're at 15. Vermont is at 19. Merrimack's at 20. So there's a lot of Eastern teams in that bubble. And you're going to see some battles down the stretch in the conference that will really go a long way. And it might even go all the way to conference playoffs. The fact that, you know, in a quarterfinal matchup, you could be playing a team that is right around that bubble with you. And I really look at Hockey East when I'm talking about that. You know, it's easy to think that Vermont and UMass Lowell could face in the quarterfinals, and the winner has a chance to stay alive, and the loser is just done. So there are going to be games that are played in the second, the last really four or five weeks here before the conference championships that will have a swinging impact on the pairwise. I don't know, though, that I see anybody really making a major move from these Eastern teams to unseat some of these Western teams in the top 10. So I think there'll probably be still a pretty balanced tournament that you'll see, you know, maybe 9 and 7 in terms of a West to East balance in terms of who makes the tournament. But the top spots are all going to be Western teams. Number 1 and number 2 seeds are going to be mostly Western teams, in my opinion.
One last thing before we go to the break and bring in Quinnipiac head coach Rand Pecknold. Taking a look at standings in the six different Division I leagues, in 5 out of 6, things are still very, very tight. And you mentioned the Cleary Cup for the ECAC, just 3 points separating St. Lawrence and Quinnipiac right now. And four teams tied for third with 18, two more behind them with 17. So things are bunched up. Hockey East, much of the same story. NCHC, just 3 points between third and first. And in the WCHA, not too big a spread either. The only team that seems to be running away with it, and they may already have clinched it, I haven't done the math, but Robert Morris has got a 9-point lead in Atlantic Hockey. But coming down the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season, still a lot to be decided.
Yeah, it's crazy, and I think that Robert Morris with a win or a tie can clinch at least a share of the Atlantic Hockey title this weekend. Bentley, who's right behind them, still has a chance to get 10 points, so conceivably they would be able to pass Robert Morris at this point. But it's rare that you see teams. You saw Boston College do it in Hockey East last year. That just dominated the conference, and that's what Robert Morris has done. But everywhere else, it is just – it's a dogfight in every single league. I look at the Big Ten as one of the most interesting ones. Everybody kind of struggling a little bit. But then you have Michigan and Penn State sitting right there in the top two spots. Now, they have a lot more hockey to play because they play right into mid-March in terms of a league schedule. Their last league games, the 13th and 14th of March. But Penn State is going to host Michigan twice, March 6th and 7th. And I look at that as just being a pretty darn awesome series because of how much, I don't want to say Penn State has dominated Michigan, but since Penn State has come into this league, maybe not the best team put out on the ice every night, has given Michigan some fits. So that should be a really interesting race to watch there in the Big Ten.
One other thing about the Big Ten. At the beginning of the season, we talked with our Big Ten correspondent, one of our correspondents, Drew Clausen. He said, you know, Penn State, yeah, Guy Gadowski's putting together a good program, but they may be 5 years out in that conference. And here they are, just 2 points behind Michigan in a league that gives 3 points for a win.
Yeah, I think that they're a pretty good team. I saw them twice in November against Lowell out here in Lowell, and they played two very tough road games and ended up walking away with a victory in the second, and that was when Lowell was clicking on all cylinders. So I think that they're a very good team, and Guy Gadowski, not surprisingly, has done a very good job of making them competitive right out of the gate. We know what kind of a coach he is. He did it at Alaska. He did it at Princeton, and now he's doing it at Penn State. He knows what he's doing coaching.
Well, we're going to take a break, Jim. We'll bring in our first guest, and that's Quinnipiac head coach Rand Pecknold. And that'll be when USCHO Live returns right after this.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gianta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com. This is USCHO Live.
We're back on USCHO Live, the February 10th, 2015 edition. I'm Ed Trefster along with Jim Connolly.
And we'll bring in our first guest. We were just talking a little bit about the ECAC standings and Quinnipiac being at top. And we're joined now by their head coach, Rand Pecknold. Rand, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Rand, your team playing some pretty good hockey, I'd have to say, right now. And I saw you guys in October, and you almost seemed frustrated in the beginning of the season that you weren't getting the performances out of your team. What has changed? It's been a lot of months since then and a lot of games played, but what's changed over the course of the season?
Well, probably put it easiest is that we've played better. I mean, when I saw you earlier in the year in that Lowell series, like we just weren't. It was early. It was the first couple of games. We weren't playing in our best hockey. A couple of my older guys, some of my best players, were just struggling a little bit out of the gate. I think they put a little bit too much pressure on themselves, and they just settled down a little bit, and we got a little bit of roll here. And I think our success so far has been, you know, just the way our team kind of they buy into our identity, they play to our identity, and they play hard. And when we do that, we get rewarded.
You just said something that I think is interesting. I hear college coaches say it a lot, and sometimes the coaches themselves don't even know how to manage it. But you said players putting a little bit too much pressure on themselves. It seems it happens in college athletics all the time. We see it all the time in hockey. How do you, as a coach, manage your players so that they don't get into situations where that can bring them down, the amount of pressure they put on themselves?
It's not easy. It's hard to do. I mean, I just think through talking to them and kind of sitting them down, and a lot of times you don't see it coming when a kid does that, and then it's, you know, so you're kind of retroactive. You're bringing them in afterwards, but it's just about getting them to keep it simple. And I think when kids get in trouble is just when they try to do too much, you know, or they try to go out and score five goals on one shift, or you know, they make a mistake and they try to make it for the next shift. It's just about keeping the game simple and playing to their strengths and letting the kind of game come to you a little bit.
As I was thinking tonight about your team and how it has developed, you know, obviously a great run to the national championship game a couple of seasons ago. But when I look at the recruiting that you've been able to do, I feel like every year you've always been able to bring in some sort of a blue chip recruit, and then just happened to pull up your stats, and I'm looking at the top four scorers on your team. You have one freshman, one sophomore, one junior, and one senior. I guess you want that every time as a coach, but it has to be nice to see that actually pan out, that each season one guy has, at least one guy has been able to come in and step forward.
Yeah, it's always nice to have that impact freshman and give you that instant offense. We need, you know, offense. We really needed it this year. We got cleaned out this past season. Just graduated some phenomenal class and lost Bryce Van Brabant to the NHL. And then we, the year before, the Frozen 4 year, we lost 11 seniors. Another great class. So, you know, we've had a lot of turnover here in the last 2 years. This is a really young team. I think we're the third youngest in college hockey. We have 18 freshmen and sophomores. So we definitely, you know, we need contributions from our freshmen. I believe the Colgate win on Saturday, I think we had 3 of our 4 goals from freshmen. So we need, you know, we don't win if our freshmen don't chip in a little bit. And, you know, we've had a good year from them. And I think even more important, we've also had some older guys have taken bigger roles from where they were last year. Like Timmy Clifton's really kind of stepped up and Soren Johnson stepped up. Those two guys have gone from fourth line guys to top nine forwards and really done well for us. And, you know, we needed that this year.
One guy who everybody learned his name very quickly last season, and that was Sam Annis, and he's having another banner year for you, 31 points in 28 games, leading your team in scoring. Just a little bit about what he has become as a player and how you've seen him evolve in a year and almost 2 years at Quinnipiac.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch him evolve this year. Like, he's a completely different player than he was last year. Last year was kind of just the third wheel on the line with the Twins, with the Jones Twins, and he was great at it. You know, he kind of lurked in the weeds and would just come in late and finish. And, you know, he's playing on the line with two of the best players in college hockey, and he kind of knew his role, and he handled it great. And, you know, this year he's got the puck all the time. It's just a completely different player, and he's elevated his game. And, you know, the puck just follows him around. He's got a knack for it, and he can finish, and he makes players around him better. And he's playing with Travis St. Denis right now, who's really, really blossomed. He's been a good player for 2 years, and now he's, you know, kind of elevated his game into an upper echelon forward in our league, and he's been great. So that, you know, those guys, that gives us a potent line. And then Matt Pekka has been playing with Landon Smith on our other line, and they've been doing great. Matt Pekka, I think, has been our best player this year. He's been just unbelievable. He just does everything well, and such an honest player, and dynamic offensively, but I can't say enough about him defensively and winning faceoffs and penalty kill and blocking shots. And in a lot of ways, like, you know, he's one of our captains along with Danny Federico. Like, he just sets the tone for us. When you have an elite player like that that's willing to eat pucks for you to win games, it just, you know, it's contagious, and it helps everybody get on board.
Yeah, Matthew Pekka, his number's nothing to sneeze at either. 5 goals, 22 assists, 27 points in 28 games. Rand, talk a little bit about the ECAC and how the standings this year just continue to evolve week in, week out, and you're going to face a St. Lawrence team that has caught fire. It seems that it's been hard to predict what teams are going to do what. Harvard had a quick run at one point. Yale has looked good at times in the season. Colgate has looked fantastic.
Yeah.
A lot of teams seem to be right there in the mix, but your team might be the only one that has taken charge at this point.
Yeah, it has been an interesting year. I mean, our league is great top to bottom, 1 through 12. Everybody's good. Everybody can beat anybody on any given night. I think Harvard and Colgate, you know, probably are the best two teams in our league, and you know, they've had some issues with some injuries here or there. That's set them back a little bit. But you know, we've found a way to be good night in, night out in ECAC games. When we've stumbled a little bit, it's been in non-conference games, which, you know, you never want to stumble. But I guess if it's going to happen, it's not a bad thing to happen in the non-conference games. But we've just been really consistent, you know, within the league. And I was just looking at the stats that I think we're, like, you know, fourth in the league in goal scoring and fourth in goals against. And, you know, it's like our numbers don't jump out at you, but, you know, what we do is we are opportunistic, you know, and we've had 16 league games and we've won 3 in overtime, 1 in the last 50 seconds, 1 in the last 2 minutes. That's, you know, that's 5 wins right there, you know, late or in overtime. And, you know, I give my guys a lot of credit. They're confident we get in those situations. That's when our, you know, our big-time players step up and win games for us, and Gartig plays well down the stretch. And, you know, other kids like Devontae's and Derek Smith and Augusta and a couple of other guys really step up and carry us in those pivotal moments. So even though we're young, we do have some veterans, and they've played well when we need it to happen.
We're speaking with Quinnipiac head coach Rand Pecknold. Something that jumped out at me a couple seasons ago with your team's run to the NCAAs is really the record of success you've had since your move to Division I, starting with the MAC and Atlantic Hockey and ECAC. You haven't had a season below 500 at Quinnipiac with you behind the bench. What things do you attribute to that really enviable record?
Yeah, well, we're certainly proud of that. I mean, we're the only team in the NCAA that's done that. I guess that's 16 or 17 years, so it's, you know, you think of all the great teams out there, like that have had losing seasons over that span. It's just, it's not easy to be good year in, year out, especially the way NHL is coming and taking players from us. But I think for us, I think, you know, we've got, you know, we've got a, it's a great campus, great academics. We've got the, you know, one of the best ranks in college hockey. Our kids all graduate. A lot of our kids accelerate and start taking MBA classes their senior year. And, you know, so we've got just a lot of good things going. But I think in the end, the reason we win is we have, you know, we have great players over that last 16, 17 years. And I give a lot of credit to my assistants. They do a great job recruiting. And certainly we have all the resources provided us from Quinnipiac University to do well. But, you know, like right now I got Billy Riga and Reed Cashman, and they, you know, they pound the pavement and they get the right type of kid for us. It's not just about getting talent. I mean, you need talent, but you need the right type of kid that's going to fit in your system. And I think that's where Billy and Reed do a really good job of analyzing kids and figuring out who's going to be a good fit for us. And then those kids come in and you have success.
Rand, when I look at the landscape of coaches right now, and yes, you have Jerry York, who's still out there, and you have Red Berenson, who's out there, and they've been there for a long time. But there's a lot of young coaches in the game. Norm Bazin, Nate Lehman, Ryan Soderquist at Bentley. There's a ton of them. I could go on all day naming these guys. But you were kind of the first young guy to go into that fraternity. I don't remember your exact age, but I'm remembering it was around 30 when you started at Quinnipiac. What was it like being that young in what was really kind of an old fraternity at that point?
It was tough to break. Actually, I was 27, but we were way back then. We were Division II school, and then we bumped up. But it was hard. You know, it was hard to get in the front door, and you know, there's a lot of barriers to entry in the NCAA Division I with the coaching fraternity. And you know, I was young, and you know, I really didn't have the contacts that I probably would have liked to have had. I do remember a couple of guys that were great to me as a young coach. One was Ron Mason and the other was Sean Walsh, and they were phenomenal to me, just kind of helping me along in the process. And you know, it wasn't even that much. It might have just been a simple thumping at something at the, you know, the national convention or little things. And Sean Walsh was the first one to play us, and you know, it seems crazy, but back then when the MAC, which is now Atlantic Hockey, came on board, literally the first year of the MAC, no one in college hockey in the four major conferences would play us. It was unbelievable. I still look back and I can't believe that. But literally, we didn't play a single game that first year. And then the second year, Sean, you know, scheduled us, and we got started getting more games, and then we kind of went from there. But it, you know, it definitely was kind of an old guard now, and you've had a turnover, and there's a lot of great coaches in the game. Like the UCAC is just loaded with great coaches, and it really makes it fun for our staff to get challenged night in, night out. And I think you know, I appreciate what the other guys in our league do. They've made us a better staff. Like, we really have to work hard to prepare for every night.
Covering the MAC back when you played that main game, I remember how big that was to your school and your campus. And it was big to one man in particular, and that's Jack McDonald, the athletic director. And he was obviously the person who kind of had a vision when he hired you to bring in a young guy and let somebody build a program. And he's retiring this year after a legacy in college athletics at Boston College, Denver, and finally Quinnipiac. Your thoughts on Jack and what he's done, not just for you and your school, but just for college hockey in general.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a phenomenal person. I can't say enough things. I've been at Quinnipiac 21 years. He's been here 20. So we've basically been here the whole time together. And just a phenomenal person. Has done wonders for Quinnipiac University in elevating our program, men's hockey, and everything with building the rank and getting us in the ECAC. And, you know, he's been on the NCAA tournament committee. And, you know, he really, I mean, there was a lot of people involved in the tournament going from 12 to 16 teams. But, I mean, he was the main guy, in my opinion, that got us from 12 to 16. And, you know, that was, you know, we forget, that was tough to have. You know, we needed that. And Jack was a big push for that, along with a couple other guys. But, you know, we're certainly going to miss him at Quinnipiac. He's just been so impressive, not only for our university, but for the game of college hockey.
And I can't disagree with you or say more about him, because he, you know, I think of when we at USCHO expanded the poll from 15 teams to 20, and he was almost a weekly phone call to try to get that poll expanded.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
He knew what it meant for the growth of college hockey and what it also meant for the league that you were playing in at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and he's a big proponent, and he's been a big proponent of women's hockey too. He's been great with that, and you know, we hosted the Women's Frozen Four a year ago, and that was a great experience.
Yeah, he told me this October that was the greatest experience in his days in college athletic, which I thought was a pretty big statement for that tournament. Rand, the landscape of college hockey, that has changed so much since you came into it, and obviously your school made a move from Atlantic Hockey, but everything that happened when the Big Ten was added, the NCHC was created. What are your thoughts on how the whole landscape change has taken shape, and do you think we're anywhere close to anything to change being over, particularly with Arizona State coming in?
Well, I mean, I think it's been good for college hockey. I mean, I remember, you know, when they all the new leagues were kind of sifting around and everybody was all talking about the NCHC, and I just remember thinking two things. One, I think I said it out loud. I was like, one, who's going to finish in last in that league? And, you know, I don't know if all those teams thought that through. And two, like, you know, some other teams that are going to left, which is now the WCHA, are going to really blossom from it, which is what's happened. And there's going to be some teams that are going to flourish on their own, getting out from under some of those bigger schools. You know, what I would love to see happen down the road, I think it would be great for the game of hockey, is to, you know, we have Arizona State coming in, we added Penn State. You know, I'd love to see us hopefully get, you know, whether it's a USC or UCLA or a Duke or Florida State or Texas A&M or who knows, you know. But, I mean, there's a lot of great athletic programs out there that, you know, would have the financial resources and the wherewithal to add hockey. And, you know, if they hire the right coach and have a good facility, you can win. You can win anywhere. I think that's been proven over and over again. So hopefully, you know, we'll see the continued growth of college hockey, and we'll have more Penn States and Arizona States coming down the road here in the next 5 to 10 years.
We're talking with Rand Pecknold, head coach at Quinnipiac. And before I let you go, Rand, we might as well look at this weekend's series. St. Lawrence Clarkson coming down to you. And St. Lawrence, obviously, that's the team that's right on your heels. But Clarkson, a team that beat you earlier this season. St. Lawrence, a team that took you to overtime before you guys got the win. What do you know about these teams and like about these teams? What's going to pose the challenges this weekend?
Well, with St. Lawrence, I mean, Greg Carville's done a great job with that team. He's got them playing hard. They're deep, you know. They kind of score by committee. I love his decor. He's really got a nice decor. And Kyle Hayton is, you know, in my opinion, you know, he's the second best freshman in the country after Jack Eichel. And he might even be pushing Eichel to be the one. I mean, he is just the real deal, and he's changed that team. I think he's at a 940 right now. They're on a 7-win streak, and I think he's been about a 957, and the kid makes saves. And you know, when you get a goalie at 940, you're gonna win a lot of games. And you know, not only is he making a case for, you know, maybe National Rookie of the Year, but maybe even Player of the Year in our league. He's been unbelievable, and in carrying that team. And then Clarkson, you know, Casey Jones does a great job. I've just always been so impressed with Casey. Like, he gets those kids to play hard, and you talk about identity. I mean, Clarkson has an identity. He gets those kids to play to it, and they've done real well this year. So we've got a battle on our hands. I mean, every night in our league, I think, is a battle, and that's what's great about the level that we're at. And you know, it makes us a better program to have to compete night in, night out. Right now, we just have to focus on St. Lawrence and try to kind of derail that train. I mean, 7-0 is a pretty good run in the game of college hockey these days.
Well, it should be an interesting weekend. Fans down in Hamden, Connecticut will get treated to some very, very good hockey. Rand Pecknold, great season thus far. Good luck the rest of the way. I'm sure we will we'll be seeing you around some of the bigger games as this season goes along.
Okay, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
That's Rand Pecknold, head coach at Quinnipiac University, and we'll be back with College Hockey Inc.'s Nate Ewell after this on USCHO Live.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
Get ready, Boston. The Frozen Four returns to TD Garden.
Score!
Be there and experience it live. The top four teams in the country will compete for the title, but only one will make history.
Wow! Backhand save!
Become a national champion.
He buries it!
The 2015 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879. It's time we switch to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs, like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gionta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
This is USCHO Live.
Welcome back to USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker along with Jim Connolly.
And we've talked a little bit to Rand Pecknall there about the changing landscape of hockey and the fact that it's probably not done. And a person who kind of works around the world of teams coming in and thinking about it, as well as doing everything to market the game. That's Nate Yule, the Deputy Executive Director. That's a big title there. Deputy Executive Director, that I'll stumble over as I say it, for College Hockey Inc. Nate, welcome from snowy Worcester, Massachusetts.
Thanks, Jim and Ed. I appreciate it.
Are you dug out first of all?
I'm dug out physically. I think it's taken a mental toll at this point. I don't know how you feel, Jim, but I usually do a pretty good job of not letting things get to me that I can't control. I think I may have reached a breaking point here with the snow.
I think I'm with you, and we have Ed on the line, and he's, you know, we were saying earlier in the show, not far from Buffalo, which we almost can't even talk about, a lot of snow, but my small, very non-heavy duty snowblower crapped on me today, so I feel the pain of physical and mental tolls that this storm has taken. Nate, let's just jump into some things here. We talked to Mike Snead, the executive director, way back when Arizona State announced, and we've had some good conversations about what's going on with them. They've got to find a home. Any light you can shed onto what's going on with that situation?
I think they've had some positive conversations, and I know that they understand that it's a priority. And they're committed not only just to doing this Division I thing, but to do it well. I think I don't have any insight or specific knowledge of anything that's on the plans in terms of where they're going to play, but I am fully confident that whatever they decide to do is going to be first class, because the people there, they tackled this head on. They didn't waste any time. It was a quick process, nothing like what we saw with Penn State in terms of, and really in reality, that was a fairly quick process, all things considered. But they tackled this head on, and they're going to have a pretty good schedule, I think, already for next season. So it's been an impressive just a few couple of months, I guess, and I think there's only better things to come.
Yeah, I've talked to a few head coaches that have already gotten calls and some that have scheduled games against Arizona State, so I think it should be an interesting couple of years as they make their transition. Obviously, wherever they land, it's going to change the landscape again. It's going to at least change the way at least one conference looks, but there's potential for even more shakeup? Is that something that college hockey is almost seeing and preparing itself for, that this might not just be one team adding hockey and jumping into a conference, that we could see a little bit more of this realignment continue to shake out?
I think you certainly could. I think everybody is still sort of feeling the ripple effect of what happened a couple of years ago, and we're only 2 years into the new sort of setup in the West and Midwest. So there certainly could be some more changes. I think the really exciting thing on the Arizona State front is it opens so many doors further west. And nobody is that close to jumping on board, but a year ago Arizona State wasn't close. And what we've seen here is that it gets people interested, and it gets people to pick up the phone and think about, you know, how'd you do that? How could we do that? It's going to get people to maybe call athletic directors and say, hey, you know, I'd really like to see us have hockey, and by the way, I could help with the money part of it. And that's the key part. It has to come from what we've seen, has to come from outside. It's got to be an external push. Somebody who cares about the university cares about hockey. Because internally, it's a much tougher rock to push up a hill. You know, when you look at finding $32 million as Arizona State did.
Has Arizona State basically told every Division One or even non-Division One, but mostly Division One university in this country, you can have college hockey? Because if we can have it in the middle of the desert, then anybody can have it in the United States.
I think that's exactly it. I think, you know, when we would have these conversations at Frozen Forest a couple of years ago, you'd say, boy, where would you like to see it? Oh, I'd love to see it in Arizona State. Yeah, I'd go to Tempe for a weekend. And everybody'd say, yeah, but that can't happen. And now it can. There's not a single school where you can say, it'll never happen there. And I think that's a really powerful thing. What's going to be even better is, if they can jump on board and, like Penn State's done in 3 years, become competitive. And when you look at some of the recruits that Arizona State's already landed, that's, you know, certainly well on its way to happening.
We're speaking with Nate Ewell from College Hockey, Inc. Nate, as we talk about expanding the sport, certainly the growth of youth hockey in the U.S. has helped provide a lot more players. Is there a right size or a size that you kind of have in mind at College Hockey, Inc. or among the commissioners that you're aiming for? I mean, right now we're going to have 60 teams next year. Is 64, 72, is there a number out there that people have in mind?
I don't think there is. I know Mike and I internally have talked about, you know, do you say, 75 by 2050 or something like that? And really when we talk more about it, I don't think you want to put a ceiling on anything, and you also don't want to say, if we don't add five in the next 5 years, it's a failure, because the sport will be just fine. It'll plug along. If we do add five, there's players that can fill those spots. There's plenty of players out there, and I think that's the real benefit that USA Hockey has provided with the growth of the sport, and the National Hockey League as well, with expanding into new areas. There are players coming from all over, and more players that can play at the Division I level. If we get to, it's almost impossible to throw a number out there, but if you got to 75, I don't have any fear that it would be watered down or anything like that. I think that the players are out there, and the great thing about growing the sport is if we add more programs, it's only going to attract more players. There will be more players coming out of Arizona because of Arizona State. And you'll see the same thing happen if we can add programs, say, in California.
And there's certainly a lot of players out there right now who are either at the club level or the Division III level that just couldn't find a spot at a D1 school, or maybe wanted to get more ice time or something. So there's talent just bumbling underneath, too.
Exactly. You go to a Division III game now, and the talent level is tremendous. It's and I haven't personally seen the club level as much, but I've heard that, you know, ACHA hockey is fantastic. I mean, obviously Arizona State had a has a good program now, and one that was able to compete with Penn State a couple of years ago. And Penn State obviously was able to make that transition with a lot of those same players. So there are some very talented players out there. And the great thing is to have them all itching to play Division I hockey.
Nate, there are a number of things that are a little bit different about hockey and specifically NCAA hockey from other sports. You know, you have players who are playing, they start their freshman year perhaps already drafted by the National Hockey League. And an interesting proposition I heard brought up recently a couple of different places by Atlantic Hockey Commissioner Bob DiGregorio. He suggested that maybe the NCAA should allow sports to have a little bit more autonomy for rules within a sport. Is that something that may be a little bit outside College Hockey Inc.'s area of responsibility, but is that something that would help college hockey if there was a little bit more, let's say, customization of the rules around hockey versus other sports that have different characteristics and different environment?
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, really, College Hockey Inc.'s existence is owed to the fact that college hockey is different than other sports. You don't need a College Basketball Inc., but college hockey, because of the competitive nature of the CHL in terms of player pool, and for so many other reasons, college hockey is just a little bit different than other NCAA sports. It's not something, you know, I don't think that we're in a position to push or anything like that. That's going to be a decision that's made on a much bigger, broader NCAA scale. But it's certainly an intriguing thought and one that I think has a lot of validity to it.
We're talking with Nate Yule, the Deputy Commissioner. Deputy Executive Director of College Hockey. I knew this was just going to be a challenge when I read this title. But Nate, you just mentioned autonomy of the sport. Autonomy in college athletics is something that's very realistic now, and it's still somewhere to see where everything is going to go. But the Big Five conferences, some teams from which play college hockey, Boston College, Notre Dame, stick out to me, and I know I'm forgetting all of the Big Ten. How do you see, or have you seen conversations or trepidation among coaches and athletic directors in college hockey worried about where the autonomy and the ability of these companies kind of make the rules, maybe pay some of their players what that could do to college hockey?
I think there's definitely a wait-and-see feel among the rest of the body and trying to understand a little bit about what kind of ramifications that autonomy will have. I think the biggest question to me is, how does it impact a sport like hockey where not everyone is on a full scholarship? And when they talk about things like full cost of attendance, how does that impact somebody who's on half ride or something like that? So a lot of that has to play out. I do think we're going to have schools that are as committed to their hockey programs as the Big Five schools are to their football programs, and you'll see, you know, if those schools want to offer full cost of attendance to hockey players, then some of these other schools outside of the Big Five are going to want to do the same. It'll be interesting to see how that all plays out, but it's definitely a wait and see at this point.
Nate, before we let you go, we want to really give you the opportunity again to make the case for the college route versus the major junior route. Over 31% last season of the NHL players are from the NCAA ranks. I know that College Hockey Inc. has workshops and seminars and talks to people and has a wealth of information at collegehockeyinc.com, but if you could give us just quickly in a nutshell the case for going the college route if you're heading toward the pros.
I will say one of the challenges we face is there's so many good reasons to go to college that it's not something that's easily boiled down into. We appreciate you running that 30-second commercial, but you don't get it all into that 30-second commercial. But simply I'll give you three things. And the first, for a player who's 14 or 15 who has to make this decision of the CHL versus NCAA, most of those kids at that age are thinking hockey first. They still have the NHL dream, as they should, and they want to see how they can get there. Well, college hockey has player development that extends into your 20s and gives you the best possible opportunity to reach your full potential as a hockey player. Second would be the education, which I think is self-explanatory. It's the best scholarship package in the world, and has produced at some of the best schools in the world, And third is just the life experience and all the players that you hear talk about how they had the time of their lives in college. All the non-players, guys like us, that say that they had the time of their lives in college. It's an experience that everybody that has the opportunity to take advantage of should. So between player development, education, and the life experience, I think it's a really easy choice. And I know if my son was in that position, I know which direction he'd go.
And I don't have a son, I have a daughter, but I know that if that option was ever there for her to not play college, I would stare her in that direction too. I think it's the right move, Nate, and I think all of us in the game know that. It's almost the preaching to the choir effect until you can evangelize, which College Hockey Inc. has done so well. We're out of time here, but we want to thank you, Nate, for your time. Maybe we can catch up again at the Frozen Four in Boston, because there's still so much to talk about from what you guys do and many of the major issues that still surround this game that we'll be talking about for months, if not years, to come.
Yeah, and we should have our newest hire, Andrew Thomas, who played at Denver, won a national championship there. He's with RPI right now, and it's going to finish out the season. He'll be on, well, if they're not playing at the Frozen Four, he'll be on board by then. And would love to have him on, because he can speak much more eloquently than me.
I don't know about that, but I'm sure that he can bring a lot to the table as well.
I appreciate
okay,
it, guys.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We'll be back to wrap up this edition of USCHO Live right after this.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
The Frozen Four returns to Boston.
He buries it!
Be there and experience it live.
Goal!
April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com.
This is USCHO Live.
/ Frozen Four. I cut that off. I'm Ed Treskert, back with Jim Connolly to wrap up this edition of USCHO Live. And this is the time when we typically look ahead at some games. There are only three matchups against ranked teams. Then we're each going to pick something that we're going to be watching, if it isn't already mentioned. We already talked about Quinnipiac at number 13 hosting number 20 St. Lawrence with its seven-game winning streak. That'll be on Friday. Number 10, BC, hosting number 17, Vermont, and number 2, North Dakota, hosting number 9, Denver.
And that's, you know, I know there's probably some other series I could pick out. That's actually the one that I've had my eye on for a while now, and it's when I saw that Denver had that coming up in their schedule. I think that this could be the proving ground weekend. It's a tough place to play. And Denver, I don't want to say they're a put-up or shut-up team right now. I just don't know that they've handled the toughest games and proven that they're supposed to be in the top 10. I think I've had them kind of dancing between 8 and 12 on my ballot over the last few weeks. They're a good team. I just want to see how good they are. I know North Dakota is a very good team. I know they're an excellent team. They're coming off a bye week, and they're at home. So that's a really interesting series. Fox College Sports will have the Saturday night game. No television on the Friday night game. It's too bad, but that is that should be a really, really competitive series.
I'm looking forward to some national games that are going to be on NBC Sports Network as Providence at Notre Dame. That's coming up on Friday and also on Saturday. They've got both games of that series. CBS has got St. Cloud State at Minnesota Duluth. That should be some good hockey to watch on Friday night. But I'm also interested in regional coverage here in New York State. Both of Yale's games in the Capital District, Yale at Union and Yale at Rensselaer, are going to be on. That should be some pretty good hockey, too.
Yeah, and you're not traveling this weekend, so you can sit there with the remote control and watch as much hockey as you want.
I just wish we got Ness in here.
Yeah, they you know, Hockey East obviously plays some great games, but thank God for NBC Sports, you get to see a lot of those when those teams hit Notre Dame.
And by the way, you can check out the full schedule and the TV schedule at uscho.com, plus I think some of the best journalism in college hockey. I know I'm biased on that, but you know, there's some good writing going on there. Don't miss anything from uscho.com. There's our plug for the evening. And by the way, if you've only caught part of this, you can catch the whole program as a podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on our homepage. And if you are not able to catch us on Tuesday evenings when we go live at 8 p.m., you can listen anytime on demand.
And I know that I sometimes go back and listen to these shows because some of these coaches and guests that we have on say some incredible things. So I'm now a subscriber to the podcast since I've become a Mac-based person and have iTunes.
Well, there you go. And I got to tell you, we've had some really great insights from various guests, and it's fun to talk about not just what's going on, but about the game in general. And hopefully we can spark some discussion. One, if you haven't heard it, I would encourage you to go back and listen to our program from a couple of weeks ago about officiating. Some great information was brought up on that one. Especially, I think it's worth it just to hear the discussion from Steve Piotrowski on how icing is called. That's worth the price of admission there.
Game changer for me. I learned so much about icing. I thought I knew the rules so well and did not know that I was always not understanding the hybrid icing rule correctly. So I agree. That was what I was going to bring up. That was the best part of that entire 40 minutes that we had with the officials.
Well, Jim, I guess that'll wrap it up for this week. We will catch you next Tuesday night for another edition of USCHO Live. You can always email us at uscholive@uscho.com, or you can tweet at us or post a comment on the USCHO Facebook page, and we'll get the information and pass it along. So until next time, Jim, we'll catch you later.
Sounds good.
All right. Good night from USCHO Live.